Chapter 2. Mysterious sounds. Bang! Bang! The pistol shots were almost simultaneous. A cow peacefully grazing 50 yards away received one of the bullets in her back. As he had nothing to do with the quarrel all the same. Neither of the adversaries was hit. Who were these two gentlemen? We do not know, although this would be an excellent opportunity to hand down their names to posterity. All we can say is that the elder was an Englishman and the younger an American, and both of them were old enough to know better. So far as recording in what locality the inoffensive ruminant had just tasted her last tuft of herbage, nothing can be easier. It was on the left bank of Niagara, not far from the suspension bridge which joins the American to the Canadian bank 3 miles from the falls. The Englishman stepped up to the American. I contend, nevertheless, that it was Rule Britannia. Apostrophe, and I say it was Yankee Doodle. Apostrophe, replied the young American. The dispute was about to begin again, when one of the seconds, doubtless in the interests of the milk trade, interposed. Suppose we say it was Rule Doodle and Yankee Britannia and adjourn to breakfast? This compromise between the national heirs of Great Britain and the United States was adopted to the general satisfaction. The Americans and Englishmen walked up the left bank of the Niagara on their way to Goat Island, the neutral ground. Between the falls. Let us leave them in the presence of the boiled eggs and traditional ham, and floods enough of tea, to make the cataract jealous, and trouble ourselves no more about them. It is extremely unlikely that we shall again meet with them in this story. Which was right, the Englishman or the American? It is not easy to say. Anyhow, the duel shows how great was the excitement, not only in the new, but also in the old world, with regard to an inexplicable phenomenon which for a month or more had driven everybody to distraction. Never had the sky been so much looked at since the appearance of man on the terrestrial globe. The night before, an aerial trumpet had blared its brazen notes through space immediately over that part of Canada between Lake Ontario and Lake Erie. Some people had heard those notes as Yankee Doodle, others had heard them as Rule Britannia, and hence the quarrel between the Anglo-Saxons, which ended with the breakfast on Goat Island. Perhaps it was neither one nor the other of these patriotic tunes, but what was undoubted by all was that these extraordinary sounds had seemed to descend from the sky to the earth. What could it be? Was it some exuberant aeronaut rejoicing on that sonorous instrument, of which the Renommé makes such obstreperous use? No. There was no balloon and there were no aeronauts. Some strange phenomenon had occurred in the higher zones of the atmosphere, a phenomenon of which neither the nature nor the cause could be explained. Today it appeared over America, 48 hours afterwards it was over Europe. A week later it was in Asia over the Celestial Empire. Hence in every country of the world empire, kingdom, or republic there was anxiety which it was important to allay. If you hear in your house strange and inexplicable noises, do you not at once endeavor to discover the cause? And if your search is in vain, do you not leave your house and take up your quarters in another? But in this case the house was the terrestrial globe. There are no means of leaving that house for the moon or Mars, or Venus, or Jupiter, or any other planet of the solar system. And so of necessity we have to find out what it is that takes place, not in the infinite void, but within the atmospherical zones. In fact, if there is no air there is no noise, and as there was a noise that famous trumpet, to wit the phenomenon must occur in the air, the density of which invariably diminishes, and which does not extend for more than 6 miles round our spheroid. Naturally the newspapers took up the question in their thousands, and treated it in every form, throwing on it both light and darkness, recording many things about it true or false, alarming and tranquilizing their readers as the sale required, and almost driving ordinary people mad. At one blow party politics dropped unheeded, and the affairs of the world went on none the worse for it. But what could this thing be? There was not an observatory that was not applied to. If an observatory could not give a satisfactory answer, what was the use of observatories? If astronomers, who doubled and tripled the stars 100,000 million miles away, could not explain a phenomenon occurring only a few miles off, what was the use of astronomers? The observatory at Paris was very guarded in what it said. In the mathematical section they had not thought the statement worth noticing. In the meridional section they knew nothing about it. In the physical observatory they had not come across it. In the geodetic section they had had no observation. In the meteorological section there had been no record. In the calculating room they had had nothing to deal with. At any rate, this confession was a frank one, and the same frankness characterized the replies from the observatory of Mansouris and the magnetic station in the park of St. Maur. The same respect for the truth distinguished the Bureau des Longitudes. The provinces were slightly more affirmative. Perhaps in the night of the 5th and the morning of the 6th of May there had appeared a flash of light of electrical origin which lasted about 20 seconds. At the Pic du Midi this light appeared between 9 and 10 in the evening. At the meteorological observatory on the Pied de Dome the light had been observed between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning. At Mont Ventoux in Provence it had been seen between 2 and 3 o'clock. At Nice it had been noticed between 3 and 4 o'clock. While at the Semnes Alps between Annecy, Le Bourget, and Le Liman, it had been detected just as the zenith was paling with the dawn. Now it evidently would not do to disregard these observations altogether. There could be no doubt that a light had been observed at different places, in succession, at intervals, during some hours. Hence, whether it had been produced from many centers, in the terrestrial atmosphere, or from one center, it was plain that the light must have traveled at a speed of over 120 miles an hour. In the United Kingdom there was much perplexity. The observatories were not in agreement. Greenwich would not consent to the proposition of Oxford. They were agreed on one point, however, and that was colon it was nothing at all. But, said one, it was an optical illusion. While the other contended that it was an acoustical illusion. And so they disputed. Something, however, was, it will be seen, common to both it was an illusion. Between the Observatory of Berlin and the Observatory of Vienna the discussion threatened to end in international complications. But Russia, in the person of the director of the observatory at Pulkowa, showed that both were right. It all depended on the point of view from which they attacked the phenomenon, which, though impossible in theory, was possible in practice. In Switzerland, at the observatory of Sadis in the canton of Appenzell, at the Rai, at the Gabrus, in the passes of the St. Gothard, at the St. Bernard, at the Gelier, at the Simplon, at Zurich, at Sambach in the Tyrolean Alps, there was a very strong disinclination to say anything about what nobody could prove, and that was nothing but reasonable. But in Italy, at the meteorological stations on Vesuvius, on Etna in the old Casa Inglesi, at Monte Cavo, the observers made no hesitation in admitting the materiality of the phenomenon, particularly as they had seen it by day in the form of a small cloud of vapor, and by night in that of a shooting star. But of what it was they knew nothing. Scientists began at last to tire of the mystery, while they continued to disagree about it, and even to frighten the lowly and the ignorant, who, thanks to one of the wisest laws of nature, have formed, form, and will form the immense majority of the world's inhabitants. Astronomers and meteorologists would soon have dropped the subject altogether had not, on the night of the 26th and 27th, the observatory of Kautokeino at Finnmark, in Norway, and during the night of the 28th and 29th, that of Istjord at Spitsbergen Norwegian one, and Swedish the other found themselves agreed in recording, that in the center of an aurora borealis there had appeared a sort of huge bird, an aerial monster, whose structure they were unable to determine, but who, there was no doubt, was showering off from his body certain corpuscles which exploded like bombs. In Europe, not a doubt was thrown on this observation of the stations in Finnmark and Spitsbergen. But what appeared the most phenomenal about it was that the Swedes and Norwegians could find themselves in agreement on any subject whatever. There was a Lafferty asserted discovery in all the observatories of South America, in Brazil, Peru, and La Plata, and in those of Australia at Sydney, Adelaide, and Melbourne. And Australian laughter is very catching. To sum up, only one chief of a meteorological station ventured on a decided answer to this question, notwithstanding the sarcasms that its solution provoked. This was a Chinaman, the director of the observatory at Zi Kawe, which rises in the center of a vast plateau less than 30 miles from the sea, having an immense horizon and wonderfully pure atmosphere. It is possible, said he, that the object was an oviform apparatus, a flying machine. What nonsense! But if the controversy was keen in the old world, we can imagine what it was like in that portion of the new of which the United States occupy so vast an area. A Yankee, we know, does not waste time on the road. He takes the street that leads him straight to his end. And the observatories of the American Federation did not hesitate to do their best. If they did not hurl their objectives at each other's heads, it was because they would have had to put them back, just when they most wanted to use them. In this much-disputed question, the observatories of Washington in the District of Columbia, and Cambridge in Massachusetts, found themselves opposed by those of Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, and Ann Arbor in Michigan. The subject of their dispute was not the nature of the body observed, but the precise moment of its observation. All of them claimed to have seen it the same night, the same hour, the same minute, the same second, although the trajectory of the mysterious voyager took it but a moderate height above the horizon. Now from Massachusetts to Michigan, from New Hampshire to Columbia, the distance is too great for this double observation, made at the same moment, to be considered possible. Dudley at Albany, in the state of New York, and West Point, the military academy, showed that their colleagues were wrong by an elaborate calculation of the right ascension and declination of the aforesaid body. But later on it was discovered that the observers had been deceived in the body, and that what they had seen was an aerolite. This aerolite could not be the object in question, for how could an aerolite blow a trumpet? It was in vain that they tried to get rid of this trumpet as an optical illusion. The ears were no more deceived than the eyes. Something had assuredly been seen, and something had assuredly been heard. In the night of the 12th and 13th of May, a very dark night, the observers at Yale College, in the Sheffield Science School, had been able to take down a few bars of a musical phrase in D major, common time, which gave note for note, rhythm for rhythm, the chorus of the chant "Do Depart." Good, said the Yankee Wax. There is a French band well up in the air. But to joke is not to answer. Thus said the observatory at Boston, founded by the Atlantic Iron Works Society, whose opinions in matters of astronomy and meteorology began to have much weight in the world of science. Then there intervened the observatory at Cincinnati, founded in 1870, on Mount Lookout, thanks to the generosity of Mr. Kilger, and known for its micrometrical measurements of double stars. Its director declared with the utmost good faith that there had certainly been something, that a traveling body had shown itself at very short periods at different points in the atmosphere, but what were the nature of this body, its dimensions, its speed, and its trajectory, it was impossible to say. It was then a journal whose publicity is immense, the New York Herald, received the anonymous contribution hereunder. There will be in the recollection of most people the rivalry which existed a few years ago between the two heirs of the Begum of Ragonara, the French Dr. Saracen, the city of Frankville, and the German engineer Schultz, in the city of Steeltown, both in the south of Oregon in the United States. It will not have been forgotten that, with the object of destroying Frankville, Herr Schultz launched a formidable engine, intended to beat down the town, and annihilate it at a single blow. Still less will it be forgotten that this engine, whose initial velocity as it left the mouth of the monster cannon had been erroneously calculated, had flown off at a speed exceeding by 16 times that of ordinary projectiles, or about 450 miles an hour, that it did not fall to the ground, and that it passed into an aerolytic stag, so as to circle forever round our globe. Why should not this be the body in question? Very ingenious, Mr. Correspondent on the New York Herald, but how about the trumpet? There was no trumpet in Herr Schultz's projectile. So all the explanations explained nothing, and all the observers had observed in vain. There remained only the suggestion offered by the director of Zi Kawei, but the opinion of a Chinaman. The discussion continued, and there was no sign of agreement. Then came a short period of rest. Some days elapsed without any object, aerolite or otherwise, being described, and without any trumpet notes being heard in the atmosphere. The body then had fallen on some part of the globe, where it had been difficult to trace it, in the sea, perhaps. Had it sunk in the depths of the Atlantic, the Pacific, or the Indian Ocean? What was to be said in this matter? But then, between the 2nd and 9th of June, there came a new series of facts which could not possibly be explained by the unaided existence of a cosmic phenomenon. In a week the hamburgers at the top of St. Michael's Tower, the Turks on the highest minaret of St. Sophia, the Rouennais at the end of the metal spire of their cathedral, the Strasburgers at the summit of their minister, the Americans on the head of the Liberty statue at the entrance of the Hudson, and on the Bunker Hill monument at Boston, the Chinese at the spike of the temple, of the 400 genii at Canton, the Hindus on the 16th terrace of the pyramid of the temple at Tangier, the Sanpetrani at the cross of St. Peter's at Rome, the English at the cross of St. Paul's in London, the Egyptians at the apex of the Great Pyramid of Giza, the Parisians at the lighting conductor of the Iron Tower of the Exposition of 1889, 1,000 feet high, all of them beheld a flag floating from some one of these inaccessible points. And the flag was black, dotted with stars, and it bore a golden sun in its center. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.